Hello. Oh my gosh. Hi, Murray.
Hello.
Did you hear Murray say hi?
Oh my god. That sounded fake.
That cat meow?
Yes.
Yeah, he was singing. He was saying, Alexander Hamilton.
There he is.
Alexander Hamilton.
Do you see how bad he is?
Yes.
Yeah, he's being crazy.
Oh gosh. This is my life.
Welcome to Book Squad Goals. This is Miri with special husband of the pod, Todd.
Hello.
Wait, why is he special? Our husbands are special too.
He's special to me.
The most special.
She didn't say your husbands aren't special.
Well, when you say special husband of the pod, it makes it seem like there are unspecial husbands of the pod.
Well, I think in my head I was thinking special guest.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
That's true. You are
but
a special
he's recently
guest.
Been elevated to husband, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's special.
It's a promotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he leveled up.
Level up.
Congrats. Welcome to the next tier.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, can I join a group chat with Ben and Justin where we just, like, talk about books?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. Justin won't say a lot. He'll mostly probably talk to you about home projects.
That's fine.
Or TV. Y'all watch a bunch of TV shows.
Actually, he just read Annihilation, though, so he does have things to say.
I could feel it somewhere in, like... I was like, someone's read Annihilation.
In the air.
yeah, we
whenever
read it
someone
together,
reads Annihilation, Mary gets a shiver through her body.
It's very good. It's very good. So, let's just get down to it. Today we're talking about Hamilton, the great, greatly successful Broadway musical written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, starring Lin-Manuel Miranda. It has been huge on Broadway. It has a multiple touring productions, and most
it pissed
recently,
off Donald Trump.
It pissed
so that
off
was
Donald
cool.
Trump. Most recently, it has been released. A original cast recording has been released on Disney Plus. But to get us into thinking about a musical about history, if you could pick another historical figure or event to write a musical about, who or what would it be?
I'm going to go because I don't want mine to get stolen.
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
This is Susan, and 1,000% Anne Boleyn. But if not Anne Boleyn, if that's, like, too famous already, then Catherine Howard, who was the fifth wife of Henry VIII, and also lost her head. Literally, not, like, you know. Lesser known wife.
Nice. I'll go. This is Kelly. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Cleopatra.
Oh.
I think that would be cool. I think the set design could be really awesome. The costumes would be beautiful. Yeah.
Should I go next?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go for one that's kind of topical.
What's your name?
Oh, I'm Emily.
Alexander Hamilton?
Yes. I'm going to go with John Lewis. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Good choice.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's been a few days for people listening, but it's still pretty recent. As of our recording, John Lewis, who was an American civil rights leader, died yesterday. And, yeah, he's... from Atlanta, so I obviously, like, feel some sort of affinity for him because of that. But yeah, I just think, I've been thinking about him a lot today, obviously, and thinking about, like, how much I, like, don't know about him, and I think it'd be interesting to, like, research that, because he is a really important figure and was, like, still doing really important work up until when he died. So, yeah.
I almost got to interview him for that civil rights trail project that I worked on.
Yeah.
It was, like, scheduled and it was going to happen on my birthday. And I was so nervous, like, weeks in advance. And it ended up not working. Roger, I'm telling a story. Mommy's on the phone. But yeah, it didn't work out with like travel schedules and stuff. But I was, I really wish I had gotten to.
Yeah.
But we'll write the musical and.
Yes, that's going to be our project now, I think. Because I know so much about writing musicals.
Same.
Todd, do you have one?
I have so many that I can't pick one. In my heart, I would love there to be a musical about Chester A. Arthur, who's a very inconsequential president that no one even remembers.
Well, there's an Andrew Jackson musical, so there's like, an Andrew there's Jackson a
musical, so I think there could be a chance. And it would just be sort of like a boring musical about this guy who didn't really deserve or want to be president and then became president anyway. I think there could be something interesting about that. But I think a more actual answer is I think Eugene Debs should be known more about. He was an actual socialist candidate for president. He ran for like 5 times in the late 19th, early 20th century. And I just remember he has this quote that's like, as long as one person is in jail, none of us are free. Like, he's like a very inspirational guy. He's like an actual socialist. The word socialist gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
So I think, like, actually learning about our, like, socialist heroes in America would be useful.
Human people misuse that term.
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah. I'm going to say what I always say, like, anytime anyone asks me to, like, pinpoint a historical event that I'm really interested in, I always say Russian attempts to get into space.
Oh, yeah.
I love the story of Laika, the rocket dog, and I would love a musical about Russian attempts to get into space from Laika's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question. Do they get a real dog or does a person
a person? A person.
Okay.
Like, I think you would have to Lion King it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was going to volunteer my dog, but...
I feel like that's a surreal concept that would...
Yeah, I think it would need to be really trippy and strange to work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we have, like a puppet dog that transforms into... the human who will play it. I don't know. It could be good. It could be good.
Yeah.
I love it.
I would see all of these musicals, except maybe the Chester A. Arthur one.
Yeah, that one would be, if that could be just for me, I would enjoy it.
Yeah. You probably, if you're listening to this, you probably don't need much of an introduction because this musical was so popular a few years ago and the hype hasn't really died down that much. Hamilton came out in 2015. Like I said, it's a musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda. You might know him from his other Broadway musical that was a pretty big hit, In the Heights.
Coming out next year, I think June 21.
Yeah, which has got a film adaptation coming out, question mark.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
You might know him from a little movie.
Yeah!
Called Moana.
Yeah. Or you might know him from his... weird turn yeah. on his Dark Materials.
Which was like...
oh, yeah. I still haven't seen that. And like,
no, I mean, the show is really good.
What is he
good.
Doing on this show?
Very, very good.
Yeah.
He also was in the new
Which
Mary
that,
Poppins.
If you haven't seen it, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah.
Not good. Like, that's fine. You're good.
It was fine.
Yeah, it was
like, if you're like, should I watch his Dark Materials or Mary Poppins, I'm going to say his Dark Materials. If you're trying to choose a Lin-Manuel Miranda joint to watch next, just skip Mary Poppins, is what I'm saying.
Hamilton the musical follows, and like maybe you could gather this from the title, Alexander Hamilton, who the musical claims has not had his story told yet. This is kind of untrue, considering the musical is based on a biography by Ron Chernow. But, I mean, I guess we're not here to really investigate that.
Also, I don't know why, but, like, maybe this was just at my high school, but I feel like we all knew about Alexander Hamilton because it was one of the only, like, fun, interesting things that happened, that he died in a duel.
Yeah.
So, like, all of the high school boys that I was friends with were, like, obsessed with this one story and, like, that we learned about in history. And people were, like, always joking about it and stuff.
Yeah. I think that's true.
Yeah. That's fair. So the musical basically starts with Hamilton's rise to political prominence, examines his marriage to Elizabeth Schuyler, and then sort of culminates with his fateful duel with his political rival and friend, question mark, Aaron Burr.
They're like Blair and Serena.
Yeah, frenemies.
Truly the
wow, so they're exactly true. Like Blair and Serena yes. from Gossip.
Obviously, Alexander Hamilton is Serena.
Oh, I was going to say he's Blair.
Oh, absolutely not. Aaron Burr is Blair.
But Serena's like Blair. The centrist who just wants to please everyone.
Yeah, but she's also like the one who like isn't cautious and like would jump in a like fountain and like be crazy and yeah.
XOXO.
There are arguments to be made. Write in and tell us.
A dot Burr.
Which one is which? We need to know.
Someone's going to write in and be like, Aaron Burr is actually Blair. Dan Humphrey. And I'm going to be like, nah.
Aaron Burr is Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
My wrist.
Anyhow.
Okay. Todd, do you want to ask your first question so you can get your joke in?
Guys, I feel very... This is... Yes, before we start talking about the musical, now airing on a streaming service owned by a large media corporation. Plus, what was your familiarity with Hamilton before watching the streamed version? I'm still very proud of it.
That's the sound of me opening my white claw to that joke.
Claws out.
Because I asked the question, I will answer it and say I have been, I guess, a Hamill fan.
Oh, boy.
Are we doing this the whole time? I'll stop. That's enough.
Are we doing this?
No. My sister got me the musical soundtrack Christmas 2015, I think, or maybe I think 2015. And we listened to it on a car ride with my parents, and I was sobbing by the end of it. And then I've been just down the Hamilton rabbit hole ever
since.
Hamilton
hole?
The Hamilton hole.
I don't like that.
I know it's terrible.
Who got you the stickers, though, Todd? That's what really sealed the deal.
You know what? My good friend Emily got me some Hamilton stickers, which I put on my laptop, my old laptop.
Oh man!
And okay. I had one of them like on my like where I rested my hand, and it got
the Schuyler sisters didn't have skirts.
The Schuyler sisters Todd. Didn't have skirts by the end because I had my finger oils. Had... Well, this is I don't want to.
Your finger oil.
Oh man,
I'm good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Oh, this isn't going anywhere public, right? This is just us talking.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I'll just kind of piggyback off Todd and say I was a fan of the musical. Like, around the time it came out, I don't often get an opportunity to see Broadway shows live. I've never seen a Broadway show on Broadway, but even, like, touring stuff. But I listened to the soundtrack a lot. I watched a bootleg of it, like, and was pretty into it. I got the Hamilton when it came out. And then most recently, Todd's mom took us and Todd's sister to see it when it toured and came to Nashville around Christmas time.
Yeah.
So we got to see it live, and it was really good.
I bet it was good live.
It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I had kind of been avoiding it, not because I didn't want to see it, but just because I wanted my first experience to be actually seeing the play rather than like listening to it or like watching it online or anything like that. Like I wanted to get the full experience. Cause I felt like, I don't know, like as a child, my parents would get me a lot of like soundtracks and I would listen to them first and get into it and stuff. But like as an adult, I haven't really been able to like just listen to the music from a play and like really appreciate it fully without context. I don't know if my attention span is just not the same as it was when I was a child or what. So I was waiting. So, I mean, obviously you can't avoid some like references to Hamilton because it's like so pervasive in media. So the first time I saw the play or like heard most of the songs was watching it on Disney Plus. But one thing that I think kind of spoiled that experience for me is, like, some of those moments I had already seen, like, parodied right. before. So, like, especially the intro, like, mm-hmm. that rap in the beginning, like, I've heard so many parodies of that that I was, yep. like, I had such a hard time, like, even taking it seriously. So I think that kind of got ruined for me. And, like, if I had, like, listened to it first, maybe I wouldn't have had that same experience. But, yeah. That was my first time seeing it. I've watched it twice now.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I will piggyback off of what Emily is saying and say that I have the same sort of experience with, like, not really enjoying listening to musicals until I've seen it. And then I'll go and listen to it, like, over and over again. Yeah. but... I mean, it also depends on, because, like, after watching it, I'm like, you know, I probably would have enjoyed it because almost the entire musical is actually in the music, mm-hmm. where there are other musicals where there will be, like, whole scenes that play out as, like, dialogue scenes that aren't going to be on your soundtrack right. or whatever, where this is, like, pretty much almost completely sung or rapped in some way. But also, it's still, like, it always helps me to be able to, like, see the characters, like, see who is singing, because, you know, I just, like, want to be able to identify people. And also the dancing and all that stuff definitely gets me more
yeah.
hyped about it. So I had also heard of it a lot. I had heard some of the songs just because, like, oh my God, the most annoying thing that ever happened in my life was that I was at a Christmas party at work for karaoke, and then this group of girls hijacked the karaoke machine and just sang the entire Hamilton soundtrack. This group of white girls, by the way, of course, who work for a publishing company. So it was a lot to take in.
Well, now, but anyway. Kelly, you live in New York. Are you telling me you didn't have $800 to shell out to go see Hamilton?
Surprisingly, no. I did not have $800.
Suspicious. Interesting.
Yeah, I know. And sadly, like, maybe if I had heard about it before it blew up, I could have gotten in. But unfortunately,
it blew up
I didn't hear about
too.
It. Yeah, until... Yeah. Yeah, it was too late. Too late. So, yeah, I hadn't listened to it, like, on purpose at all before I watched it. So this was also my first time, like, fully hearing the music. And I also watched it twice.
Yeah. Woo-woo.
Susan?
Yeah, I had not listened to it or seen it until yesterday. So I'm, like, yeah. for real brand new. I knew, like, I had heard just from, like, being a person – alive in America in the last few years. I've heard, like, chunks yeah. of songs here and there. And I know, like, certain references to the play if I hear it, but I hadn't actually watched it. So a lot of things came together for me when I watched. And one of my best friends who works in theater is a huge fan. So she's been, like, begging yeah. me forever to do this. So I told her today as soon as I was able, like, hey, I did it. She's like, tell me everything. And I'm like, oh, we're gonna talk about it for, like, 2 hours. So, so hey, Katie,
yeah,
this is for you.
Yeah. I guess should we say, like, what did we like and dislike about it?
Sure. Did we like or dislike it generally?
Yeah, like, did you
we're just gonna start with that off the bat.
Well, my first talking point that I actually have here is, how does this musical portray women? Does Eliza's story get told? And I'm like, well, that seems like really...
yeah. yeah. As a brand new person, aggressive. I'd love to talk about likes and dislikes. Just to hear what everyone
yeah,
else
please.
Thinks
yeah.
about this, too. People who know it better than yeah. I do.
I'll start.
Yeah.
I, like, loved it, yeah. you know? I mean, I think it's very good. I think it's kind of, like, undeniably a good musical, yeah. you know, like, good as musical theater. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be debated, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later in the episode, about how this portrays history,
sure.
et cetera, yeah. like, all these different things. But on a basic level of storytelling and music, I think it's pretty hard to argue
mm-hmm.
that it's bad. I think, one of the main criticisms I've seen of it on Twitter, other than the historical element and the, like, glorification element is that it's corny. And I'm like, it's a musical.
Yeah, it's musicals a fucking musical. Get corny sometimes.
Yeah, you like if you don't. If your problem with a musical is that it's corny, you don't like musicals.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
just.
That's what I be telling know, people like, about Phantom fine. All the time when people are like, yes. well, isn't it kind of yeah. over the top and crazy? I'm like, it's a fucking musical.
It's
like,
called Phantom yeah, like, of the Opera, not right. like Phantom people, of the Suburbs.
Also, like, watch Love Never Dies and get back to
the Love Never Dies.
I want to write Phantom of the Suburbs now.
Phantom of the yeah. Suburbs.
Coming oh, to man. Anyhow.
Let me do an off.
Musicals
off,
are campy.
Broadway
that
theater.
Is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's to me that's it. Not yeah. really a criticism, because it's like when someone says they didn't like something because it was boring. I'm like, well, that's just your opinion, man. Like,
your opinion?
You can't just say, like, I didn't, like, this wasn't for me, so it's yeah. bad. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I, like, right. so I'm a huge fan of musicals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, personally, I have a problem when people say they don't like musicals. Like, that's a hard thing for me, because I'm like...
It's a personal
It is. It's sort of like when people mm-hmm. say they don't like cats. It's kind of, like, on a similar level for me, because it's, like, so yeah. much a part of, like, my like... core like loves upbringing. And yeah upbringing, because like I said, like my parents yeah. brought me up on like sound musical soundtracks
yeah.
like
yeah my grandmother brought me up on musicals, so I definitely yeah. feel like it's a part of my personality
right and like
somewhere.
I just like you said it like it feels so like undeniable, like watching Hamilton I just sit back and think there's so much talent behind this, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you sing on Broadway, there's so much talent behind that. You have to learn choreography. Like, even if the choreography to a viewer, like, seems simple or, like, you're not even noticing it, it's, everything is choreographed, right? Like,
I mean, if you're not noticing it, someone's probably done their job.
Right. In the link that I just sent you guys, and we can, like, add this in the show notes, but it's, like, it's a recent, video of the cast answering questions about the musical, and like one of the things they talked about was how difficult it was to learn Helpless and Satisfied, the choreography for that, because
yes.
they basically had to learn the choreography one way and then like learn how to do it backwards. Meanwhile, like while they're doing this, they're singing, and they're not just singing, they have to emote, you know, like,
yeah. right.
And this is one of the things, like, I was trying to explain to Ben, because, like, Ben is not a huge fan of musicals, and it's something that right. might break us up one day. I don't know. but I'm like,
he does love cats, though, so.
He does love cats, yeah. thankfully. Not the musical. Not the musical cats, but yes.
Cats the musical. right.
No, yes.
Don't have time for that?
Wild.
Okay, never mind.
I love Cats the Musical, by the way.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But it is wild.
But yeah, I think the thing you have to understand about, like, singing in a musical is, like, you're acting and singing at the same time. And, like, mm-hmm. you have to do a good job at both.
Yes.
While doing choreography, like, it's a lot. And there's so yeah. much talent behind it. There's so much talent on every level, like the people doing the staging, the costuming, the writing, the music, like,
yeah.
and like, it's just so much talent that comes together that like a musical like Hamilton, that's just like really well done. Like, I don't understand. I have a hard time understanding how you can't appreciate that, like on an art, yeah. artistic, yeah. on a talent level, yeah. you know?
Totally.
And like watching these performers, like you also have to keep in mind, like these people are doing this every day.
Yes.
It's, like, so exhausting. Like, I used to work at a theater, and, like, I would see these people in rehearsal for months, and yeah. then they would be, you know, they work every night, and they do this, like, exhausting, emotionally draining performance, like, every
night.
Single night.
Mm-hmm.
They work their bodies, like, ridiculously hard. Like, we had literally, like, a chiropractor who was, like, part of our, like, sponsorship, who would, like, come and, like, crack the actors' backs and stuff
Gosh.
And like, fix their bodies because
wow.
they were all like dying yeah. by the end of whatever they were doing. And like, there's so much, like, not only do you have to like emote with your face and your voice while you're singing, but like, in a musical or in a play, like, you're going to have people sitting far away from you. So you can't do it all with your face. You have to do so much acting with your body.
Well, you have to do subtle things for the people who are sitting close, and you have to do big things for the people. Like, it has to work from every area of the theater. Like,
right. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, so, like, admirable.
Yes. Yeah.
And, yeah. So I just think, like, I think I agree with you that when people say, like, I don't like musicals. I understand if it's not, like, what you go to for enjoyment, but I think it's, like, it's hard for me to hear anyone insult any kind of art and say, like, that's bad, or, like, I don't like that.
Yeah, right.
As though it, like, that means it's not valid, right, and that means it doesn't take skill, you know?
Well, and also, like, it's not as if the actors are singing, like, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star up there, right? Like, they are, some of the,
It's really complicated.
Like, if you look at something like Satisfied or...
Renee Elise Goldberry
is...
Who plays Angelica.
Who plays Angelica. Is so
has
good.
Has to do some, like...
Just looking at the like, muscle in her throat when she's singing Satisfied is, like, you can see how hard she's
And, like, if she messes up, like, you don't... That's a other, like, I think really wonderful thing about live theater is, like, that's it. Like, however you perform it, like, that's what's going out there that night. Because, like, you don't get to do another take of it. So, like...
Yeah. And out of so many musicals I've seen, like, people barely ever mess up.
Which is
amazing, you know?
Well, I also love this idea. So, like, Chris Jackson was in the Heights, which Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote. And I just love that he was, like, sitting down and writing Washington. And he was like, huh, who should be Washington? Oh, yeah, it should be Chris Jackson. And, like, to have the gravitas or the charisma needed to pull off someone who the audience is already going to have all these associations with, and to do it in such a way that I think brings out, like, new elements to Washington. I think the thing that this musical does that I think I have really come to appreciate, like, in watching this version, is that it takes these people who are these, like, pedestals, right? We mostly think of them as, like, statues or people in a history book, and it really makes them people again, right? Like, I don't know that we think about the fact that, like, oh, yeah, probably the Founding Fathers were horny sometimes, right? But there's, like, multiple songs about how horny they were.
We all know, like, that Thomas Jefferson is the horniest of the three.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of my favorites.
We know,
like,
it is, Todd. We heard what you did to the skirts of the Schuyler sisters.
No, sorry.
We know you relate.
when we first meet George Washington, he's, like, scared and, like, doesn't think they're gonna make it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that whole song that he sings when we first meet him is about, like, how they're outgunned and outmanned, etc.
And that's probably...
George Washington comes out of this looking real good.
That's probably how Chris Jackson moved on to his greatest role of all time as Moana's father.
Probably.
Oh, is he? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I will say there is, like, a little bit of a click around
to Moana again.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, and a lot of the same people pop up in various things he does.
Anthony Ramos is going to be in the movie in the
He's going to be such a good song.
And also, like, he was in 21 Chump Street, which was, like, a little thing for NPR. I mean, like...
Oh, yeah, I loved that.
I don't think that's
This American Life.
Unusual, though.
No.
To have, like, a group of people you work with. It's just something fun.
Yeah. Just an interesting thing.
So, speaking of just, like, how hard people are working, that was, like, I mean, Justin and I watched it together. So, actually, he can get in the group chat because he'll talk about Hamilton.
Yes, yes, good.
But, like, we were being so quiet the whole time because we were just, like, not wanting to, like, miss anything because so much is happening with, like, every breath.
Yeah.
That, like, when there was a tiny moment of pause, I was like, are they, like, Olympic-level athletes? Because this is insane. And to do that every day, like, I can't imagine. Yeah. And just the amount of prep that went into the first time it happened live is, like, I was like, this is blowing my mind. But on a writing level, like, I think my favorite thing is how – and this is, like, I'm going to sound really poetry geek right here, Todd, so help me out. But
yes, please.
The way that rhyme is used throughout is so fucking good. Like, and so like, varied the way that it happens. Like, it's just like, that is just good fucking writing, and that was impressing me the most. Like, I really want to listen to it separately from watching, just so that I can on a sound level. Just listen to the rums the whole time.
I was just going to say really quickly, in the song My Shot, like Lin-Manuel Miranda has spoken about this a lot, but like it starts off with Lorenz and Lafayette and Mulligan rapping, and they're doing the like, boom, ba-choom, like a very like sort of like grade school, you know, schoolyard rap, like, my name's John Lorenz and I'm here to say I like to rap and I rap it, you know, like that kind of thing. And he has specifically talked about when he was writing My Shot, he was trying to pack as much rhyme and wordplay into every line as he could. So as soon as Hamilton, like, starts rapping in that, you can immediately tell that he's on a different level from everyone else. And so it's, like, this way that I don't know that, like, most people are going to think, like, oh, well, Hamilton's really rapping much better than those other fellows. But it's, like, a subconscious way.
Yeah.
For Lin-Manuel. Well,
because it's Lin-Manuel Miranda, so he's not rapping better than them. But
he's not rapping better than them, but he is rapping
more complicated.
He has written a better rap than them.
Yes, he has written a better rap than for them.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and then their raps do become more complicated later and in other numbers also. But yeah, that just really is like the thing that impressed me the most. And I hate that I've only had time to watch it once before now, because before talking about it today, I mean, because I just want to talk about rhyme for like about 2 hours.
I mean, David Dix.
Yeah, I mean, we
my God.
David Dix. So good.
I can't. Like,
what I love the most is after, you know, Hamilton kind of blew up, David Dix did some touring and like press junkets and stuff. And he, I don't remember what late show he was on, but he was on one of the late shows. And they were like, your rap is so fast. It's the fastest rapping I've ever heard. What song is it in?
Guns and Ships.
Guns and Ships.
Yeah.
They're like, it's the fastest rapping I've ever heard. And he was like, oh, no, I can't rap faster than that, actually. And then he like proceeds to do part of a rap from, the experimental hip hop group he's in, Clipping, and it's just like insane.
Wow. Yeah.
He is so, so talented.
Yeah. He is very attractive. Very talented.
I was gonna have
he's so talented at looking good.
But it wasn't enough to make me watch Snowpiercer.
Oh, no. See, I do want to watch Snowpiercer. I'm skeptical. But I do really love that movie, so
I do. Yeah,
I'm gonna give it a shot. I just have not been in the mood.
I've never been attracted really to a man with a French accent, because usually I'm like, ew, like you're French. But that's just how I feel about Frenchmen.
Yeah,
But when he was doing it, I was like, oh,
what that tongue do though?
Yeah.
Mm. Can you imagine the strength of a tongue?
No,
that
I can't.
That fast.
But I will think about it the rest of the day, probably, since you just said it.
I've been thinking about it.
Guys, I think I have to actually. Oh, I hear someone. I have to leave.
You gotta go,
now.
Todd.
I gotta go. Sorry.
I just have a feeling my dad's gonna listen to this episode.
Sorry, Charlie.
Sorry, Charlie.
Oh, oh man,
we have needs.
Now I do want to get it. Now we're done with the fluff, hard-hitting questions only. This musical is about Alexander Hamilton and to some extent Aaron Burr and the other political figures surrounding them. But I think the show also tries to highlight some women, specifically the Schuyler sisters, specifically Eliza. And at the end, you know, there's this whole thing, and it talks about how Eliza's story is getting told. And when we were watching it, I just said out loud, no, it's not.
Like, yeah.
This musical's not about her.
Yeah.
So, and like, what do we think about how the show portrays women?
To reference that interview again that we will link, or not interview, it's a, like Q&A, but Philippa Sue actually sort of says something that speaks to that indirectly, but it relates. She's like, man, all of you guys are out there all like saying like never gonna be president and having fun, and like I'm over in the corner just like crying the whole play.
Yeah.
Like that is, she is sort of like, she's playing sort of Hamilton's moral center a little bit more than she is a character. And this is very typical, like, this is the typical role that women play in men's stories.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like, yeah, like, she, we don't get to see a range of emotion from her. Like, we see a little bit of joy, I guess, when she's hanging out with her sisters at the beginning of the play. But, yeah, like, other
I
than
do
that.
I love the sister relationship.
Yeah.
And sort of the support between Angelica and Eliza. And, like, I love the scene when Angelica comes home from England after Hamilton's had an affair. And he's like, oh, I'm so glad to see you, Angelica. And she says, no.
She's like, I have some things to say to you, sir.
I'm not here for you.
I'm here to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't come for you.
Yeah.
But, like, even those few moments are far between and are not, like, that's not character development.
No.
That's just
a
fun moment.
Right.
I think it's hard because, and, like, this is, like, a question that comes up all the time when you're watching historical narratives that are focused around the center of the action of history. And it's like, unfortunately, these women who are the main characters that are women in this story didn't get to participate in the central action because that is how history fucking went.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, they could have explored those characters more and given them more depth, but also they spent so much time on packing in every single detail of the action of what actually happened that it's, like, it would almost create, like, a disconnect to, like, stray away and focus on, like, this personal stuff for too long. Even though I feel like you could do a different musical and have them have it be about them. You know,
Hamilton
and,
too.
Yeah, everything from your perspective, you know. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard because obviously I'm always like, I want to see more women with central roles. But I do think that, like, there are limitations when it comes to – it's like when people watch a war film and they're like, there's no women in this. And it's like –
yeah, that's why I hate war movies.
Any women there.
Boring.
Like, yeah. Sorry, but there weren't. Yeah. Like, and it sucks.
And, like,
but
for the first half of the musical, it basically is a war musical, right? Like, it's about the Revolutionary War. I think you can –
there's actual battles.
But, you know,
battles.
In a fun way.
Very limited, you know.
Yeah. I think we can simultaneously – I think the way I fall on this is, like, there's another version of this musical where Lin-Manuel Miranda doesn't include as much Schuyler Sisters as he does. But it still doesn't mean that the musical did as much as it could have. There are moments like – I really love the moment where Burr says when he's campaigning in the second act, it's 1800, ladies, tell your husbands, vote for Burr. Which is, like, subtly recognizing, like, women can't vote. But it doesn't – but that's not, like, a super radical thing. Yeah.
I think the most it does that is, like, a little daring and interesting is giving Angelica as much time as it does and giving her Satisfied, which I think is a great song and just, like, a great refrain throughout. But I think, like, having, like, her relationship with him and her, like, decision that she made to give it to her sister instead is, like, interesting, I think.
Yeah.
And not your typical story of, like, whereas Eliza gets kind of put in that role of, like, you know, moral center. Angelica's more of the, like, you know, the smart one who he writes letters with and stuff like that, which is another kind of trope in itself. But I do think that, like, she gets a little bit more of a meaty role to play.
I do think, though, that for today's audience watching it, it does speak to women a lot, even if we're not watching a woman the whole time. But I think so much of this is about who gets to participate and who gets to make decisions. And while women were not making them then, at least at that level, now they are, but we're still not there. And, like, I think this, it is still talking to those problems without having a woman doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, like, in a way, I think the most vocally, artistically challenging roles in this musical are for women. Like, Jasmine Cephas Jones, who plays Peggy in the first act, and Mariah Reynolds in the second act. Insane singing. Like, just super impressive.
Yeah.
Renee Elise Goldberry, who plays Angelica. Philippa Sue, like, they're all so great, which the men in the musical are too, but like when I'm thinking about like what cast members am I most impressed by, it's
the women. They're like probably top three, if not like top five, if not
also top. And I have to say this because I always say this because I'm insufferable. Peggy's in the first act, but she's not in the second act because she was dead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, she died pretty young.
Okay, that was something that we were talking about this morning. I was like, historically, she had to have died or something. Because otherwise, like, why did she just drop out of the narrative?
In that book I borrowed from you, Mary, he says that he didn't write a little, like, musical thing for her in that song. She just goes, "And Peggy," because she, like, dies. So she doesn't get a personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, why not mention, like, have one of them mention in the second act that she's dead, you know?
Just I mean, she gets the same amount of time that John Adams does, so.
Yeah.
I love that they just are like, yeah, he shit the bed. Anyway, moving on.
My favorite thing is when the king is like, John, like, Adams? The little guy?
I know him.
Oh my gosh, can we please talk about Jonathan Groff?
Yeah. Incredible.
Because
so spitty.
We cannot talk about talent without talking about Jonathan Groff.
Yeah.
So talented. Good. And it's so crazy, like, that, because he's like a big name in Broadway, like, and he's playing a bit Broadway role name. In this.
And he's also been in a lot of film.
Yeah.
He's
been Frozen. Like,
but as a bit role, it's still like, that's like the greatest bit role I've ever seen, maybe.
It's just, just really, it's really cool that they got a big name like that to like play a little bit role in Hamilton, honestly.
It's like the only named character in the musical that is always white.
Yes.
Most of the time white, I would say. And usually some sort of comedic actor, like I'm thinking like Taron
Killam played it, Philip Darcy James, aka Shrek on Killam. Broadway.
Brian Darcy James.
Yeah.
Sure. I love Taron Killam.
He played Shrek on Broadway.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's usually like pretty comedic actors, and I think Jonathan Groff particularly brought like a true madness to this role that's very funny. Because he has almost no facial expression except a crazed look in his eye.
Yeah. It
doesn't move a lot.
Yeah.
The like dead way that he sings like the la-di-da part. Yes. He's like da 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 da.
And it's spitting just, like, everywhere.
No emotion. Yeah.
Spitting everywhere.
Which for about 10 seconds I was like, does he know? And then I was like, oh no, he's entirely meaning to do this.
Yeah, no, I read actually something that said like, Jonathan Groff has said, like, oh, that wasn't, like, something I was doing for the role. I just actually spit a lot when I sang.
To which
I was like, I feel real bad for Lea Michele if that's the case, because they were very close in Spring Awakening.
Lot of spit. And, like, no, like, there were close-ups on everyone, and no one else was spitting like
no
that.
No one else was spitting like that.
I didn't mind it. I mean, it felt part of the madness to me.
And he was like, I know that's how it reads, but I think, like, on like when I'm performing on stage, people don't see how much I'm actually spitting while I'm singing.
Yeah, I guess that's the problem with a close-up performance.
Yes.
Good thing he wasn't playing, like, a romantic lead in this.
It got to the point, though, where I was, like, after the second time he was out, I was like, I cannot fucking wait until he's back, and he has to come back, like, please come back.
Yeah.
And then I clapped when he came back the last time. It's like, I'm watching this on an iPad, and I'm like,
And seeing the video, you get to see how much, like, in the Reynolds pamphlet, he's just, like, prancing around the stage with the other, like, guys.
Throwing
the papers in the air. Yeah. Like, you know, that's stuff that you don't get from listening to the soundtrack that I think is really great.
Yeah, that's something my dad was saying, because he listened to this a lot, but watching it on Disney was the first time he'd seen it. He was like, I didn't realize how much Jonathan Groff was actually in the play just listening to it. Because he was like, because listening to it, I was like, how'd they get Jonathan Groff to do this role? And then I was like, oh, no, he's actually in it a lot. So
also, I think Jonathan Groff and Lin-Manuel Miranda are just
good buds. Yeah. I did not know that Jonathan Groff was going to be in it. So when he popped on, I was like,
yeah.
Yay. I'm just a very big Spring Awakening fan. So.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I also have seen a bootleg of Spring Awakening with Jonathan Groff and Lea Michele.
What do you mean?
Got to see Jonathan Groff's butt.
I was going to say a booty leg.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say Spring Awakening
on a tour where, I don't know if there are any Degrassi fans here, but Craig from Degrassi was playing the lead male character in this tour that I saw. And he walked on stage and I was like, Craig?
Craig, we're going to see your butt later? That's crazy.
I saw it on tour too, and I didn't get to see a butt on tour, but the lead, the male lead did rip his co-star's shirt off.
Yeah, that happens.
Nice.
Wolf.
I'm grimacing. You can't Spring tell through the podcast.
Everyone.
And I'm smiling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's no good or bad time to jump into this, but since Hamilton's been released on Disney Plus, there's been sort of like a bit of a revitalization of conversation about the musical. And some people have argued, and I don't have anybody specific to point to. This is just something that I've seen debated on Twitter. Is this musical glorifying slave owners? Most of the founding fathers had slaves. I mean, hello, George Washington with a mouthful of slave teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Hamilton didn't own slaves himself, he did help manage and sell the Schuylers' slaves.
Yeah, there's a lot of gray area on whether or not he owned slaves at some point.
Yeah.
Like, there's some potential evidence that he owned slaves, like, after their marriage or, like, between their marriage or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's, so, like, it's iffy.
Yeah.
What do we think about this debate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's kind of interesting is the way in which they condemn some characters for owning slaves and not others, because I think Thomas Jefferson gets called out a lot for being a slave owner. Yeah. I cannot reference the exact lyrics because I just don't know the play well enough yet.
We know who's really doing the planning.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But then, as you were saying, like, George Washington kind of comes out of this looking like a big old
like
hero.
A good person almost.
Yeah.
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 So I think to me, that's the main problem of it is like, not that I'm saying, like, I don't think the answer is to ignore all of the slavery, but it's like, it's kind of interesting how you chose to, like, you know, Thomas Jefferson is your bad guy, so he's the bad slave owner. Like, and I'm not arguing that Thomas Jefferson is a good guy, because I think go back to a couple of episodes ago and that's not how we feel.
Also, you know, like, on top of owning a bunch of slaves, also raped and impregnated and groomed, hit like a 13-year-old girl slave.
But the play does mention her by name, which is kind of cool. Like,
he's like, Sally, take a look at this letter.
I was like, that's Sally, Sally, like the Sally.
I mean, but I think it falls into that trope of like Jefferson becoming like the sin bearer, or like, you know, he carries all
the
burden, for all the founding fathers, even though Madison.
Yeah.
Washington, certainly. Like, all of them were complicit.
Yeah. And it also kind of props Hamilton up as this abolitionist.
Yeah.
When he really wasn't. Like, he did have, I forget what the term is, but I have a link here that from the New York Times that just kind of, like, goes over some of the, like, facts about history in a way that's not super annoying. Because, like, there are people who are, like, a little too, it's like, it's, this is basically fanfic, you know, like, it's not like, it's not going to be like,
They also didn't figure out how to run this country through rap battles. Okay. So,
right.
What? Like,
right.
Though I do love imagining meetings as rap battles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to find this terminology. Okay. Manumission. So manumission involved voluntary release by enslavers. Abolition was more of a radical proposition.
Right.
Hamilton did not advocate abolition. Abolition was like, we are done with this. No more slavery. Right. Manumission is like,
you have should, to make your own decision.
Yeah. Like, you should set them free, but it's up to you, I guess. Like, and that's like a distinctive difference. And also he, you know, was actively managing the slaves of the family he married into. Right. So it's like you know, we say to, like, nowadays, like, if you're not speaking up or if you're silent, you're part of the problem. Yeah. Like, he was very much as passionate and, like, he was about other things and as angry and as belligerent he was about other things. Like, this was not one of them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's interesting because there is a line, I think, once again, in My Shot, where he says, we've got a couple manumission abolitionists. And I think he sort of, like, puts it together in such a way. I never thought about what the word manumission meant. And I mostly...
Yeah, and I didn't know that either until I read this article.
Right. So I think what he's talking about there is him and Lawrence, right? Like, he's a manumissionist, and Lawrence is an abolitionist. But when it's put together like that, you just think, oh, yeah, Hamilton's an abolitionist. Great.
Yeah. And this article also notes that he did support John Lawrence's plan to allow black soldiers to fight in the revolution, but... he was not helping him write the pamphlets about anti-slavery. He was not, like, actively participating in this anti-slavery movement the way that John Lawrence was.
I do think this would be a lot more of a, like, I think that, like, the play is self-aware that these people were slave owners. I think it would be one thing if it was, like, propping those people up with no recognition that there's a discussion of this happening the entire time. And it seems like the people behind the play are trying to push a clear message that, like, we don't think that's cool that they did that. But also, if the whole cast had been white, I think we'd be having a different type of discussion about propping up slave owners that way. The decision to cast people of color to play slave owners, I think, is saying everything it needs to say about where they stand on slavery and slave owners.
And that's exactly the second part of this question. Is how does this debate sort of intersect with the fact that in the casting notes, like when they cast for touring productions of Hamilton, it explicitly calls for actors of color, except for someone like King George, who sometimes is an actor of color, but isn't always.
Well, it makes sense for him
like,
to
that's
be
the only,
a pretentious
that's
white.
The only white character. I mean, it makes sense for him.
Yeah.
And, like, the like, supporting cast is...
Yeah, like, the, you know, some of the...
Varied.
Dancers or, like, someone who... I think the... person who played Seabury, maybe, like some of the minor singing roles.
And this is the roles, these are the roles that, like, people of color are usually playing on Broadway. These minor roles, these background performances. So it's like, oh, we have a diverse cast. Like, look at all of the black people in the background on stage. And it's like, I do think that they're, like, this is really important as a musical because, like, people of color have been so excluded from, in the same way that they've been excluded from Hollywood, extremely excluded from Broadway. And, you know, occasionally there will be a show that has, like, a black lead or a show that is by a black person or, like, a lot more in plays, I would say, than in musicals. But, you know, it's, like, to have an entirely, almost entirely, a cast of people of color is a really huge deal, and the fact that it gained all of this traction and the fact that it does center hip hop and, you know, actually is, like, pointing out these, like, parts of black culture that musicals don't normally do at all.
Well, I think it's interesting that, like, the musical, because Lin-Manuel Miranda is both, like, a hip hop nerd and a theater nerd, it it, like, layers in both all of these, like, references to other musicals, like I Am the Very Model of a Modern Major General, but also all these references to, like, hip hop, like when the cabinet battles happen and it's like, you could have been anyone anywhere in the world tonight, but you're here, you know, in DC or in New York. Like, there's all these different references.
Last 5 years.
Nobody needs to know. Yeah. There's all of these, like, multi-layered references to, like, these the genres that I think normally people would think, like, there's no place for hip-hop in Broadway, or there's no place for Broadway in hip-hop. And I think what Hamilton shows is, like, that's explicitly not true. Mm-hmm. Like, they work together really well. You just need to have someone who has the vision to do it. And I think if you had said, like, hey, someone's writing a hip-hop musical about Alexander Hamilton, like, no, people would be like, no, please, don't do that. Because I would think of, like, educational rap or something.
Mm-hmm. You know, educational
like, Alexander Hamilton, he started the Treasury. Like,
full disclosure.
Oh, please,
like
yes.
A school bus rock
when Todd was a wee child.
Third grade.
He had a CD called
The President's Rap.
The President's Rap.
Wow.
That I listened to in third grade because my I sprained my ankle and I couldn't go to PE. And my teacher let me just stay in the classroom and I would listen to this really, really bad CD about the president. And it was the whitest rap ever.
It's really on brand that you decided to listen to something about the presidents during the time that you had off. I would be like watching like cartoons.
So. Mary and I were trying to fall asleep one night
and
I was like, okay, wait, I'll do this.
No, we were trying to fall asleep. On our wedding night.
Look, I wasn't going to go there.
That's
I was going
to
give us a cover.
That's an important piece to leave out, Todd.
Yeah, I know.
One night.
I did it on purpose.
Just a random night.
Yeah. And I was like, here, I'll do something that'll definitely bore you to sleep. And I just listed every president. And
but he did it like George Washington.
1789 to 1797. John Adams, 1797 to 1801. Thomas just, and I went to Trump.
Wow.
And he finished, and then he was like, are you asleep? And I was like, what the hell?
Like, no.
You're like, no, but is it too late to annul this marriage? It's only a few hours old.
Yeah. Anyway.
I remembered what I was going to say, which is which is that it all comes back to the, like, refrain throughout the musical of who lives, who dies, who tells your story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a little bit of a fuck you to these people.
Yeah.
To say, like, guess who's telling your story?
Yes.
It's the people who were born out of the, like, horrible mm-hmm. situation that you created.
Right.
Because you thought that they weren't good enough. Well, now these people are literally playing you. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're as good as you, if not more talented.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, wait, sorry, this is just like a side note, because when I said, like, if you said that someone was writing an Alexander Hamilton rap, you'd be laughed out of the room. There's this great video that I'm sure.
What about 1776? It's not a rap musical.
It's not a rap musical, but it is a musical about John Adams.
Sit down, John.
Sit down, John. The sit down, John, you fat. That's a explicit reference to 1776, which is very funny. In like 2009, Lin-Manuel Miranda went to the White House as part of like some sort of showcase mm-hmm. and performed the first song from Hamilton and said, hey, I'm writing this, mixtape about one of the greatest, rappers of our, you know, in the world, Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton. And everyone laughed because like, it's a funny idea.
Barack Obama and Michelle just
they
like,
were like, ha ha ha, ha ha ha. And then, you know, six years later, it's like the biggest thing ever. No one's laughing now because, like, can't, you know.
Everybody laughed, but they were also low key, like.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
What do we make of Hamilton's success as, like, a crossover into the cultural consciousness? Like, I don't think this happens with musicals that often. Like, when I just said 1776, no one was like, yeah, 1776.
Oh, yeah.
My jam.
Look, you don't know me. Not in this season.
No, I've never heard of that.
Fun fact, in the movie version of 1776, Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World plays John Adams. A very young Mr. Feeny. But, like, nobody, like, this doesn't happen all that often where it kind of crosses over. I mean, Phantom of the Opera, definitely.
Rent.
Les Mis, Rent, maybe Wicked. But so, like, how does Hamilton work as a musical? Can we compare it to other musicals?
Yeah.
Does it make us rethink Broadway as a genre?
No, I don't think it makes me rethink Broadway as a genre because I think...
I agree.
I think music, like, there are always some, like, we just listed a bunch. I think there are always musicals that do this. One musical that this, I think Lin-Manuel Miranda is putting a lot of obvious musical references throughout this because, like we said, like, he's a theater nerd and a, like, hip-hop nerd. So you've got both those references. One of the musicals that we haven't talked about yet that I saw a lot of influence and a lot in common with was Jesus Christ Cats. Superstar.
Ah, we haven't talked about it because, you see, I have not seen it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about Jesus Christ Superstar that I think, just to first connect it to what you're talking about, is at the time, so Jesus Christ Superstar came out in the 70s, I think, originally. You know, like, rock music in a musical was not done. And if you listen to the music from Jesus Christ Superstar, it's very clearly, like, influenced by popular rock music of the time. So I think that's definitely, something that it has in common as far as, like, crossing over in that way. The singing in it is very, it's not your typical, Broadway singing. Mm-hmm. It's, you've got, like, a lot more, like, screaming and a lot more, like, rock vocals happening. Another thing that I thought it had in common was, I found the Judas character, the Aaron Burr character was very similar to, the Judas character in Jesus Christ Superstar, and that a lot of it is framed around, like, here's this person who we normally think of as, like, having done this really terrible thing, but, like, actually he's a tragic figure, and we're actually getting a lot, but not all of the story from this character's perspective.
Yeah.
And both Aaron Burr and Judas start the musical. Like, they're the first people we hear from. Like, Judas introduces us to Jesus, similarly to how Aaron Burr is the one who introduces us to Alexander Hamilton. So I saw a lot of crossover there, or a lot of connection there. And I think, obviously, like, I wasn't alive at the time, but I think that Jesus Christ Superstar sort of hit similarly. And it was controversial because it's about religion, Jesus. And a lot of people boycotted it. It made a lot of...
That's why I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Yeah. It made a lot of, like, headlines and stuff like that. And a funny story about Jesus Christ Superstar. So the way I got introduced... You can cut all this out. But the way I got introduced to it is, you know, like I was saying, my parents listened to a lot of musicals and stuff. And, like, we'd be on long car rides and they'd listen to Jesus Christ Superstar. And the first time I heard it, like, I had no context. I had no idea what we were listening to. And, like... I was not raised religious, so I didn't make those connections right away. So, like, my first feeling as a child listening to Jesus Christ Superstar is, like, why does this character keep singing about how he's going to die? Like, get over it.
We're all going to die, Jesus.
We're all going to die. Why are you so convinced it's going to happen sooner rather than later?
Oh, my God.
So I was like... Judas, I'm with you, dude. Like, I don't know why he keeps singing about dying. He needs chill.
Get over it.
I'm with you, dude.
Yeah. Judas. Yeah. That's the episode title. Judas, I'm with you, dude. but yeah, so that's just an aside. But my point going back is, I think throughout history, there have been musicals that have had that crossover, that have been controversial, that have, like, spoken to the youth and have spoken to pop culture. This just happens to be the one that's happening right now. I think Rent had a very similar crossover in the 90s, like, cause, I mean, and into the 2000s, when I was in high school, like, you could not go a day without hearing somebody singing Rent. I was hanging with the theater kids, obviously,
I was not a theater kid, and I was hugely into Rent, so.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like, I think of all the musicals that I remember in my time, like, in the time that I've been alive and, like, experiencing musicals, Rent is probably the one that is most similar as far as like crossover success.
Book of Mormon has had big crossover.
Yeah.
It had like a huge explosion too, just of like it, like these musicals that are almost sort of like part of a counterculture or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and like Hair too is one, that's big. But yeah, I think that's really interesting to think of Aaron Burr and Judas as like.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think that seems true. I haven't seen Judas Christ Superstar, but I love the way that.
So you guys should watch it.
It's very good.
I don't know.
The movie's really good.
Yeah. I think the movie's really good.
Performed that when I was.
Didn't they just do one on NBC with like John Legend?
John Legend. Yeah. Don't watch that. Watch the 1970 something movie instead.
All right.
Yeah.
Done.
My mom and I. My mom, of course, is, like, a huge fan of anything that's, like, vaguely hippie-ish. So, a couple years ago, she was like, we have to watch Jesus Christ Superstar. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
She also made me watch Hair when I was in, like, high school.
That's great.
Yeah.
Which also, Hair had boobies on stage.
It did. So.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Jesus Christ Superstar doesn't have boobies on stage.
Womp, womp.
Hair the Musical is also a great movie, I will say.
I'm just partial to the music in Jesus Christ Superstar.
It's very good.
That's a little ALW, isn't it? Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber?
Yes, yes.
What?
Good. Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Yes,
we missed that
y'all.
Week when they were doing free.
We should have watched it.
Thinking about like movie versions versus stage versions versus all of this, do we have any thoughts on seeing a musical professionally recorded live, like Hamilton was, or Cats, the 1998 Cats was, versus something like a movie musical that was made to be a movie, like Moulin Rouge,
or High School Musical,
or a stage musical that's been adapted into a movie, like Phantom of the Opera or Les Mis,
mm-hmm.
or just seeing it live.
I got a hot take. I know y'all know this hot take already, but Phantom of the Opera, the movie. It's not so bad.
I kind of enjoyed it. I liked it.
Oh, I wish I had my shirt.
I mean,
Emily, I need to send you a link. I have a shirt that says Justice for Phantom of the Opera 2006.
Yeah. Well, here's and this is a callback to the beginning of the episode, because the main critique I hear about the Phantom of the Opera movie is it's over the top. It's very dramatic.
Well,
it's crazy. I'm like,
have you
not heard of Phantom of the Opera before? Like, where, like, what were you walking into the theater expecting otherwise? Like,
the main thing about Phantom of the Opera that you can't experience via a film version or a movie is having a fake chandelier almost fall on you.
That's true.
Which, but my main critique of the movie is Gerard Butler can't sing.
Yeah, that's true.
That's,
but
they can't get past
fine.
That.
Yeah.
You will the girl of the day. You did not. I've shown that to me
times. It's not going to be as bad though as Russell Crowe.
No,
nothing
but
could ever.
But
which is just good. It's just
Stars.
A crime to Javert and Stars, because Stars is one of the best songs in Les Mis.
Yeah,
and he butchered the shit out of it. I love that song.
So,
love that song.
What I'm hearing is maybe we just have a problem with like Tom Hooper.
Well, also there's a problem with casting people in a movie musical that
can't sing.
Yeah,
Meryl Streep as the witch Into the Woods.
Here's the deal. I'm always going to go. I'm not always, but I will go to the bat for La La Land because I liked it a lot and I saw it in theaters too many times.
Oh,
but
I loved it too.
But imagine how much better it would be if Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone could sing and dance.
Yeah. It would have been
like, even
musical.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they saved jazz.
I mean, Ryan Gosling did save jazz.
Bad.
But imagine if that was like, you know, Leslie Odom Jr.
I think him saving jazz makes up
and Jasmine Cephas Jones.
Give me La La Land with Leslie Odom Jr.
With Leslie Odom Jr.
Nice.
Yeah.
It makes the whole movie better.
The Sound of Music is like one of the best movie adaptations of a musical still.
Yes.
I think Chicago is a great adaptation.
Chicago is good also.
Oh yeah, Chicago's also good. I would watch a film version of Hamilton, but what I think is like particularly like magic about the live version is like what Emily was saying earlier. Like, this is like
knowing it's live.
Yeah, it's like, but it's just this one time performance that like you'll never, no one will ever see that exact same thing again. Now a lot of people are seeing this one, but like you know, if you're seeing it live.
But it's still got the energy of a live performance.
Yeah, and there's just, there's so much, like, packed into it that is, like, way more impressive, I think, if you're seeing it live than if you are watching a movie. Again, I would watch it, though, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. And knowing that, like, it is, even though it's live, and I think that it is pieced together from maybe two performances.
Yeah, and then there's some they did on a soundstage so that they could get some of those close-ups, because you can't really do that in the middle of a live performance.
Right. But I think that having it that way, like, having a movie musical is more... Like, they have a lot more freedom with how to tell the story and, like, how to shift through time and stuff. Where, like, watching the filmed musical is – it just feels like you are watching a live version because you can tell, even though it is, like, edited, like, it's presented as it's supposed to be, which is there's no breaks. There's no, like – you see every, like, scene change. You see every moment.
Which I appreciate, because, like, I like to see how they construct the sets, and I like to see how it's staged and how people are dancing. And there's stuff that, like, I think you would lose in a movie version because they would try to make it literal instead of figurative. Or, like I've seen a lot of people, like, freaking out online about there's one particular sort of, like, chorus member who each time there's a duel, she's the bullet. And, like, she, you see her, like, holding her hand up, like, she's the bullet, and it kind of, like, she moves it forward. That's really cool. If it was a film, they'd just use a bullet.
They would just use a real bullet.
They'd just CGI a bullet in there.
Yeah.
And if they tried to use the person as a bullet, it would be really weird.
It would be weird,
It would have strong Cats energy.
Yeah.
I just, I really love filmed stage versions of musicals, and I have several of them on DVD, and I wish they did it more often. Now I will get on my soapbox. I think when you film staged versions of musicals, it provides Broadway and makes it accessible to an entire group of people who otherwise wouldn't get to experience. I grew up in a really rural area, and we did not have money or time to just go to Atlanta for an afternoon to see a musical.
Right.
I feel I feel attacked.
No, I mean, if you had that, that is
somebody didn't go to Atlanta all the time
every weekend.
But you know, if I was
yes.
If I was an hour away instead of 2.5 hours away, that would be a big difference. So, I mean, it's just like it's providing Broadway shows to people who otherwise might not be able to see them.
Yes.
And I don't think it diminishes ticket sales.
No.
You think about something like Cats. Cats didn't stop selling tickets because they recorded it.
Right.
Hamilton didn't stop selling, or, well, they have now because Broadway shut down. But, like,
I don't think this coming out now, it's not going to diminish how much people want to see Hamilton when they can tour again, when they can be on Broadway again.
If it's, anything, seeing the show, like, live on a screen is going to make you want to go more to see it in person.
Like, if you hear, if you want the experience of live music, listening to an album isn't going to make you not want to go to a concert.
Exactly.
Right.
Right. I was just going to say that even though you can, like, feel the energy in watching the live performance, there's something different about being in the room where it happens.
Yeah.
Oh, good breath.
Okay,
good breath.
We have to quit now because...
Show's over.
Well,
I won.
Drop the mic.
Just, like, a real quick thing I was thinking about. I think the reason why Hamilton wouldn't work as a movie is exactly what we've already said. It's because, like, the set that's there is so much imaginative. Like, sometimes there might be, like, a table out there or, like, a barrel that they sit on or something. But it's mostly just, like, this balcony with the moving staircases and the moving floor.
Well, I mean,
you can't recreate that with, like, and if they were actually just, like, on a battlefield in Yorktown, that's way less powerful.
In New York City.
Well, I will just to play devil's advocate, because I definitely do hear what you're saying. I do think Chicago did that a little bit with the with the film version. They played with sort of, like, real life versus stage and mixed them together in a way that I thought. I think Chicago is a very successful adaptation.
Yes,
And I think that them doing that was a huge part of what made it successful. It's just, like, sometimes let's just lean into the fact that this is supposed to be on a stage.
Right.
And present it that way.
I think it requires a director who understands what the strengths of the stage musical are.
It's not Tom Hooper.
It's not Tom Hooper, no. And it's probably not Joel Schumacher. Although maybe. Yeah. Like, no, I mean, I also love Phantom of the Opera, but I don't think he did, like, the best job.
No, no. And I think Phantom of the Opera, well, Phantom of the Opera is a different beast, because Phantom of the Opera is the opposite of minimal.
Yes. Yes.
That's true. It also takes place within a theater.
Yeah.
Right. So it's got sort of like the one set.
Yeah. So you do still get
Joel Schumacher is the best director for that. You just needed to cast.
Just that,
different.
Though. Like, nothing else. Yeah. Like, you did it. Good job. It's, you did your musical.
Yeah. I don't know. I just love a staged version of a musical, and I love recordings of it because you get to see all those expressions up close, and you get a good idea of what it looks like. You can hear everything. It's just like, you can see the spit. Feel the spit. It's really nice. Like, I'm thinking, like, there are recorded versions of Into the Woods, Sweeney Todd.
The recorded version of Into the Woods is so much better than the movie.
Yes. Yeah. It's so good.
I blame Meryl Streep. And I know I've said this already, but just to make sure everybody heard me, she's fucking awful. She can't sing.
Remember that one time she was in a movie where she played a woman who couldn't sing, but her husband said she could?
Yeah, that was the true story of her getting casted into the woods.
Because she can't fucking sing.
Well, I'm also just thinking about, in terms of, like, set design and stuff, the musical Hadestown, which I am still a little bit obsessed with.
Yeah, and again, that's one I'm not listening to until I get to see it.
No, that's fine. Over several days, I watched a bootleg over several days, and it has a similar thing where, like, the whole musical basically takes place sort of in, like, a bar, like a sort of, like, I mean, there's not really, like, a set. The band is on the stage with the performers. There's, like, a little New Orleans-style balcony.
I mean, it's kind of like Spring Awakening in a way. Spring Awakening doesn't really have a set. They just have, some chairs they use.
Well, it kind of sounds like Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is just a thing that a lot of musicals do, and I think...
Yeah, I'm also, like, Rent kind of doesn't have much of a set.
No, we have named these four musicals, and those are the only ones who do it.
Okay, fair. Yeah, you got me.
Only the ones we know.
What were you going to say, Susan?
No, never mind. I thought of my favorite like theatrical adaptation into a film, but it's not a musical. So a lot of what we're talking about would not actually apply in this case.
Well, is it a play?
Yeah. Boys in the Band.
Oh yeah.
I tend to like stuff that all takes place in like one set. That's why I was thinking about it. And like the film version does that too, but it has most of the original Broadway cast.
Yeah,
that makes a difference too.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say like that's one of the special things too about recording something like this is like you get to have that original Broadway cast together like permanently. Like we'll always have that. Mm-hmm. It's one of the, and I'm sorry because like I have complicated feelings about this film. But that's for another episode. It's one of the only good, like, actually good things about the Rent movie is that it's mostly the original Broadway cast. And mostly
except
the original.
Except for Rosario Dawson.
Right. But, like, just...
Which is hilarious because she's, like, clearly much younger than the rest of them.
But, like, even though the cast was, like, way too old to play those roles at that point when the movie was made, like, it was still just, like, still really like nice to see Anthony Rapp in that role. You know, Idina Menzel.
And, like,
I
never saw Rent on stage until much later. Like, I saw the movie when I was in eighth grade, and I became obsessed with it from the movie because, the music was good, and I could tell that, like, the performers all had, like, this kind of chemistry with each other. And so I became, like, so into it. And then, of course, later when I saw the show and all that stuff, I realized, like, how, like, pretty bad the movie actually is. But,
but you know,
it still holds a special place in my
exactly. I have a soft spot for that movie, even though, like, objectively I know it's bad just because, it's like, bad. Rent is so special to me. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
That's... If anyone is interested in, like, Company is one of my favorite musicals, and I just was looking to see, like, is there a stage version recorded?
Yeah, I think so.
Apparently, as of, like, a month ago, you can watch it.
So, on where?
I'm pretty excited. It looks like on Criterion.
Mm. Okay.
But I think you can also rent it on Prime.
Okay. Here's a fun fact.
But pretty much every Broadway musical has a professional recording made of it.
Mm-hmm. You just can't watch it.
They just sit in the New York Public Library, and you have to have like a special research.
Yeah, that's so dumb.
Approval.
Just let us see the movie.
It sucks. I want to see that recording of SpongeBob the Musical. Just kidding.
That's I feel like because of the pandemic, that might change.
I hope because so. Yeah.
Broadway isn't coming back until at least next year.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe seeing how much success Hamilton had.
I hope so.
Plus, I think places are going to realize, like, this might be... I think this is going to be a shift for a lot of different industries, and I think that this might be one of them, and I hope so. Because, yeah, like, I live here, and I can't afford to go see half of what is playing. Well, like, I've seen... Since I moved here, I've seen maybe, like, you know, like, five musicals or something, which is a lot for, you know, anyone who doesn't live here, you know? But living here, it's like, I could go see... a million of them if I had the money. Like, I could be going every night, you know? Right. And, like, I wish I could, but I'm poor.
Even when you take into account, like, lottery tickets or something, it's, like, still such a huge time commitment to go wait. And, like,
and even rush tickets are often, like, you know, $45, which is, like, not what I normally spend on an event, you know? Like, I'm trying to – I, like, try to stay in the $20 range.
Right.
So
Well, and it's super interesting to me that I think this entirely happened because of the pandemic. Like, Hamilton was slated to be released on Disney Plus, but not until October of 2021. But because In the Heights was pushed back for reasons that I understand, although I really wish we could have seen it this year.
Just put it out. That's
just
what
put
I'm
it
saying.
Out. It's
put out all the movies.
Yeah,
why bother?
You're not gonna like theaters are not gonna be a thing for a long time. Just give us the movies. Just
Christopher
give it.
Nolan said Tenet's coming out. August 12th, so I'm gonna be there.
He said it was coming out July 4th or some shit. He keeps
Christopher Nolan.
Like, my movie will be the reopening of theaters. Like, you know what?
Yeah, maybe it won't.
Go fuck yourself.
Also, like, you don't want that because it's not gonna get a lot of money, I don't think.
No.
No, it's not. Or, and everyone's gonna hate you even more than they already do.
Or if it does get a lot of money, it'll lead to a bunch of super spreading events, and then your film will be known as the reason why 300,000 Americans died.
I mean, I'm just thinking, like, the movie theater in Hattiesburg isn't even open.
Yeah.
Except for private
screenings. It shouldn't be.
Yeah. Like, the theaters here aren't open either.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my friends told me a few weeks ago that he had a dream that we went to the movies together. And he forgot his mask, and I screamed at him in public, and then told all the other people not wearing masks basically to go fuck themselves.
And you were like,
and I was like, that sounds like a thing
I've been giving off.
Yeah.
That's... Like, I would probably do that.
Yeah.
But also, you wouldn't catch me at the theater right now.
No.
Either.
Absolutely not.
Do we want to do the last one?
Yeah.
I don't really have anything to say about it. I just think it's a nice observation.
People have been saying that Hamilton is sort of like the perfect document of the Obama years. It's this sort of like sheen of progressivism that basically is just telling the same old story. That might be like going a little too harsh, potentially, on...
I don't want to go that hard on Obama.
Yeah, look, like, we still miss him.
I mean, it's fair to go hard on Obama, though, because we do have to remember and repeat that he had more deportations during his administration.
Yeah, and drone strikes.
Like, he is very problematic, despite the fact that I love him.
I just miss having a competent person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone who could speak and who could read.
And who at least professed good values, even if he didn't always follow them. Like, at least he was encouraging them to other people. You know, I mean, it's very complicated, obviously.
Yeah.
It's easy to see why, like, in 2016, as there was a shift in power coming, no matter who it was going to be, like, from the Obama years to, you know, to things that people weren't totally enthused.
And this idea that people are angrier now because they, like, because Obama had his presidency and, you know, the general public is like, okay, but, like, that's still not enough. And then the other people are like, you know, the idiots are like, you had a black president. Like, what else do you want from us? It's like a lot. A lot more.
Yeah.
And so it just, like, ignited this, like, even more passionate racism from racists because they don't understand the actual concept of it, right, or yeah, the history.
The subjects covered in this play becoming so widely talked about in 2016 because the play was being talked about so much too, and you know, like the Mike Pence incident.
That was pretty great.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, then, Mike Pence went to the show, and the cast was like out. Didn't they like say?
Yeah. At the end of the play, they were just like, "Hey, we hope that you uphold the values that this play upholds as well." And he just walked out. He got mad.
Yeah.
He was like, "You want me to think that immigrants are good and to not hate women?
Come, mother, we're leaving.
We're leaving."
Yeah. Well, he's a coward. But anyway, we're in a similar type of like potential transition time right now. Like it's another election year and it just came out streaming. So I think that's also part of why a lot of the same conversations are happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Again.
For sure.
That is interesting. I didn't think about that.
Do we want to just thumbs up, thumbs down? Do we like it?
Oh, wait. What's everyone's favorite leitmotif?
Todd said, one of the questions should be, what is everyone's favorite leitmotif? And I was like, okay, do you want to tell everyone
what a leitmotif is?
I would have to listen to everyone answer first before I can even
form. I said, yes. I said, Mary, yes, I'm a born pedant. I would love to.
Okay. Go for it.
Okay.
Explain.
Well, look, leitmotif properly, I think, occurs more in classical music and opera, but it's basically a melody that recurs. So my favorite.
I thought you were talking about, like, lighting.
No, it's German, I think. Leitmotiv. Okay.
I also thought you were talking about the lighting.
I was mean like in Little Women?
I was like, definitely my favorite lighting moment is when George says he feels blue and taps his thing and changes
and
the
light. And it changes to the
light. Yeah. That's my favorite leitmotif.
So, like, for me, I love the, you know, every time they say Alexander Hamilton, they sort of say, like, Alexander Hamilton or... Aaron Burr, sir. Like, that happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My favorite is that in the second act, when Angelica comes to visit during Take a Break, they see each other and they, like, you know, scream, like, yay! And Eliza says, Angelica. And Angelica says, Eliza. And then Hamilton walks in and, like, Lynn does this thing that he does a lot where he sort of chokes up while he's singing and he goes, the Schuyler sisters. And it gets me every time. It, like, chokes me up, which is just really preparing me for the rest of the second act, which also made me cry a bunch. So, like, that's my favorite sort of, like, recurring musical melody.
I don't think that I've seen it or listened to the music enough to, like, have a favorite.
Yeah, that's fair.
I will tell you, though, and I know that I mentioned this yesterday, my least favorite is them saying Rise Up over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Falcons.
That's fair.
It's gonna make me think of the Falcons, because that's... Yeah. Like, if you Google Rise Up, Falcons pictures show up very close to the top.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big football thing. And I'm like, no, that's what the bad guys say, Rise Up. So
I don't know. I mean, I've listened to it a bunch, and I don't know that I have, like, a favorite. I love Satisfied. I love how every time they say Satisfied,
that was
going
to be my answer.
Sing part of the song.
Yeah.
Damn it, Mary.
I need to watch it again before I can answer that question.
Yeah.
But one thing that I will say I love is one, like, just little character thing I love is how very much Prince Thomas Jefferson is.
Yeah.
That's true.
Just the purple
I love the, like, arrogant flamboyance of that performance.
Yes, like...
He's like, when he's singing What Did I Miss, he's just like moving and like dancing
jaunty.
The entire song.
Mm-hmm.
Like dancing on his heels in a way that I couldn't do while also singing.
Talent. This is what I'm talking about. Just so much talent.
Also, I know we've said this a little bit, but like, can I just shout out Leslie Odom Jr. one more time?
Yes.
He's so good at this.
So
he's
good.
So good. And my favorite song is, what's that one he does that is like so good?
I don't know, because...
Wait for...
I think Aaron Burr gets all the best songs.
He does, yeah. I think so.
Well, it's because, and I know we haven't said this, we've kind of talked about it via text, but like, Lin-Manuel Miranda is not a good singer. He's
or
just
actor.
Not. He's just not, like, he can carry a tune, but he's kind of got one speed, and it's Lin.
And it's
like,
Lin.
He can be himself, and that's it. Like,
he can do a frog voice when he's choking up a little bit.
He brings sort of, like, his personality to Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
When we saw it live, Hamilton had a completely different vibe because it wasn't Lin-Manuel Miranda. Yeah. It was interesting. If you watch In the Heights, Usnavi
just seems like Lin.
Is just him. Like, he has one speed. He's good at what he does. He's an excellent lyricist.
Yeah.
He's an excellent writer.
Yeah.
But performing isn't. He's really enthusiastic.
Yeah.
He's really earnest, and I like that. But he's not gonna like do something that seems totally unrelated to him.
I was listening to a podcast where someone said, I wouldn't want to watch Lin-Manuel in something that he didn't write for himself. And I think that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Like, he knows what he can do, and he can write for himself.
It's not a Texas accent. I'll tell you that. He cannot do a Texas accent.
But,
and I would also honestly rather see someone else do something that he wrote. Because as much as he wrote this for himself and knows his limitations, I also feel like it's so... It's like you're watching him go toe-to-toe with Leslie Odom Jr. and David Diggs, and you're just like, there's no, like, no. Like, you just, the contrast in, like, talent on display, like performance-wise, is, like, almost embarrassing for him.
And, like, clearly he's very talented. He's a very talented writer.
Yeah.
Obviously, he wrote all the jams in Moana.
Yeah.
Which is,
but he didn't like. I would never argue that he isn't like an incredible writer. Like he is, and musician, and like the storyteller. But yeah, I just feel like you don't have to cast yourself in things. I feel the same way about certain directors who cast themselves in things, and I'm like, dude, you can't act. Like, Quentin Tarantino loves to put himself in a bit role, and I'm just like, dude, you cannot act. But I second your, you know, opinion of Leslie Odom Jr., who is just, like, so fantastic.
He's so fantastic, and, like, he has such a nice singing voice. I was trying to think of something, like, that sounds better than that, but, like...
No, he just, he's very, like, smooth. Like, it just clear as a bell when he's singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the women first entered last night... Justin was like, wow, the women sing a lot better than the men in this. And I was like, I think that also all the men sing better than Lin-Manuel Miranda. Yeah, that's who we're comparing the women's voices to. Yeah.
Anthony Ramos.
Pretty huge.
Sings great. Leslie Odom Jr., great. Mm-hmm. David Diggs does not really sing. He mostly raps.
Yeah, but his rapping is so good.
I mean, but so, I mean, I really do think that all of these parts were so specifically written for people.
Yeah.
Like, Lin-Manuel Miranda was like, okay, this is going to be David Diggs. I'm going to write a really fast rap. That's what he can do. Mm-hmm. He's really good at it. This is going to be cool singing. I'm going to write it for Leslie Odom Jr. This is going to be like a serious fatherly song.
Leslie Odom Jr. Jackson wasn't the first Aaron Burr, though. So I don't know that he wrote it for him. No, he wasn't who played Aaron Burr off Broadway. And I feel like now I should shout out who was. So hold on a minute. And I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe he did write some more songs specifically for Leslie Odom.
Maybe not. I mean, I know he thought of Chris Jackson when writing Washington.
Yes,
and
that
he
is
thought
right.
about David Diggs.
He rewrote, from what I heard, he rewrote some of Guns and Chips to make it even faster when you realize how fast David Diggs
But maybe rap. Not Leslie Odom Jr. It's just like, but you know, he didn't write a bunch of singing for himself because he...
Okay, I'm not going to be able to say this name. So, Utkarsh Ambudkar was the
Utkarsh
original?
Ambudkar.
He was the original...
Sorry.
I don't know. Who is it?
He's so Lin-Manuel Miranda and a bunch of other people, including perhaps David Diggs, did a like a sort of review on Broadway called Freestyle Love Supreme.
It was like an improv show.
Right.
There's a documentary on Hulu about it if you want to see. But actually, like on that documentary, Utkarsh, is that how you say his first name?
Utkarsh,
He talks about how one of the things that he regrets most in his life is not like sticking with Hamilton, but he was dealing with issues of like alcoholism at the time.
Yeah.
He
was in, I mean, like, I guess probably most famously, he was in Pitch Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's, you know.
Getting back to favorite leitmotif.
Yeah.
I will say that my other favorite, because I was going to say Satisfied, just because I love that song, and I like. how that fits in with the other one I'm going to say, which is the would that be enough or it would be enough. Because I just think that that is, it's such a beautiful melody that that little line has, and the way that it like repeats and kind of slides itself into other songs is like, so it's so like recognizable and just sort of like stabs your heart a little bit every time you hear it.
There's a TikTok I'm obsessed with it. I'll have to send it to you guys. It's like, the caption is, my cat when I'm waking up before 2 p.m. to go back to class.
Alexander, come back to sleep.
It's just like a close-up of the cat.
Oh my God. An early meeting out of town.
Oh my
Still
God.
Dark outside.
I know. It's so good.
That's so funny.
Also, of course, I have been just sort of staring at Mary sometimes and just like stretching out my hand and saying, best of wives and best of women.
Oh, and, like, my
leave
goodness.
The bedroom or something.
So corny.
I'm into it.
Yeah, but also
it.
Like
I'm
Philippa Sue is really amazing and her voice is so beautiful. And just like we were saying, she kind of gets like the short end of the stick when it comes to, you know, her character, but she does have some really beautiful like song moments. Like Burn is really, really
Burn
beautiful.
Is great. And she carries the ending of the musical, like sort of on purpose, but like, if you're not crying by the time she gets to the orphanage, like, what are you doing?
I'm, like, cracking up when, like, the entire, like, cast is like, the orphanage. I'm like, this sounds silly. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was bawling.
I was bawling. It's so
But.
Because, guys, don't you understand? Alexander Hamilton was an orphan, so it's like, she did it for him.
It comes full
but
circle.
But they wouldn't let children born out of wedlock be in that orphanage anyway.
Oh, boy.
That didn't get mentioned.
No.
You mean the ones who are more likely to be orphans?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but, like, when she, in that song, too, she says, you know, she lists all these things she does, and then she says, it's not enough. It's not enough.
Yeah.
And, like, I just really, I love that leitmotif.
Yeah. Well, and of course, like, it does the thing at the end of the first act where it's like, hey, we're going to take all these songs from throughout the first act and sing them all at the same time. Isn't that fun? And it is. It's really
it
fun.
Is. I always
one of my favorite things about musicals is when they just, put them all on top of each other. I'm like, it's working. This is great.
Yeah. How did they do that?
Yeah.
Well, guys, thanks for talking about Hamilton.
Yeah. Anytime. Yeah.
Glad I finally watched it.
Me too.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me be on this up, guys.
Yeah.
Of course.
I didn't cry during this recording, but I did cry.
No problem, Hamilton.
Every time.
Every time I have listened or seen Hamilton.
Yeah.
We do have a piece of listener feedback.
Mm-hmm.
From Emily's dad.
Yeah. He sent it to me 3 times.
Good.
Did he do that on purpose, or was that like a failure of his text message?
No, he said the text after this was like, you're trying to get me to think before I'm awake. Let me make sure that he didn't send me anything else. Because I think after that, he was just talking to me about what's going on in Portland with cops going around in unmarked vehicles and abducting people, essentially.
We live in a police state.
Yeah.
Love this country.
So that is just an aside my dad talked to me about after he gave me his feedback. Mm-hmm. But yes, so a couple of episodes ago for our last other episode, we talked about Stamped from the Beginning, written by Ibram X. Kendi. And my dad also read that book along with us and listened to the episode. And he said, I think the most important truth in the book is that racist beliefs stem from racist policies designed to promote self-interest and the contortions people create to justify those policies. I think if you were going to like boil down the book to like one, like, what is this book about? I think that's a good summary of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks. Thanks for explaining that. We shouldn't have done this whole episode. We should have just let you say that. Yes. And then we would have been like, yep, that's it.
That's true.
And that would be enough. I won't stop.
It's great. It's great.
We also want to take a second to plug two things important to us. You may have already seen on social media that we are sort of promoting, encouraging people to donate to a scholarship that was created in Adam's name, Adam Emily's brother. You might remember him. He was a guest on our show for The Girl with All the Gifts. There is a scholarship created in his name. It's a travel scholarship for students who might not otherwise be able to travel internationally so that they can have the experience of getting to travel because Adam loved to travel and was a big advocate for traveling as part of an education.
Yeah.
Okay. And Emily's family is matching donations up to a certain point. And every little bit counts. They're trying to get the scholarship to be a permanent feature at UGA.
Yeah, we really need those donations right now in order to make sure that we can get the scholarship to continue running. I don't know how scholarships work. That's not my deal in this whole thing. I'm just there to be like, yeah, sounds good. But the people who do know about these things know that there's a certain amount of money that we need to have to make sure that we continue to have funds to support students. We've been able to do this for 2 years in a row at this point, so it's really exciting. And we, and like, obviously nobody's traveling right now, but that doesn't mean that we won't be in the future. And so we want to continue to be able to give those opportunities to people and remember my brother in a really, like, special way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, yeah. And his birthday is coming up. And happy birthday, Adam.
Happy birthday, Adam.
We miss you.
The link to donate is going to be in our show notes, but you can also find it on our Facebook, and it's currently in our Instagram bio as well.
So thank you, guys.
Plenty of ways to find it.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, Susan?
Feels a little weird to follow that with this, but
we should have done had Susan go first.
Here we are. I know. As soon as we started talking about the scholarship, I was like, ooh, we really should have reversed this.
It's fine. Let's just kind of like erase the slate. We're talking about
something
else.
This is something
now.
If you need to laugh now. The chief creative person at the company I work for has created this card game called Two Trumps and a Lie that he invited me to work on with him. So we've been putting this game together and we're trying to get the first run of it produced. So we have a Kickstarter for this game, but it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. You know the game Two Truths and a Lie, so these cards will have two Trump quotes and another thing. You'd be surprised how many other wild things sound just like Trump quotes. So, yeah, we're trying to make game night great again. And if you could maybe kick in a little money, we have about a third of what we need raised so far, but
and I love
I feel
that
like you would like the game.
So. The box says the best game with the best words.
Yes. One of the rules for gameplay is that like whoever loses is supposed to immediately get on social media and say it's like fake news and that they actually won.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to play that game, please check out the Kickstarter and just like throw a couple dollars at
in
us,
our
maybe.
Show notes.
I throw cannot more wait money to play this game, so let's make this happen, people.
Yeah.
It's in the show notes.
The blog is back.
It's back.
The blog is back. The blog is back.
The blog's back. I don't know what to say in this part to make it some lyrics.
Now on the blog, we have many cool things for you to check out. The Babysitter's Club post that we mentioned last episode, I think. Or we're formulating, creating last
episode. Yes, it's happened.
It's here.
We've done it.
It's happened.
I really feel like I just have so much more I could say about Babysitter's Club.
I know.
So good.
It's so good. But yeah, you just did the one.
Speaking of things that made me cry, Babysitter's Club.
Yeah, Babysitter's Club for sure did. Kelly and I have a new book club!
Yeah!
We kind of talked about it last time. But go ahead.
Queer Girl Book Club.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a discussion of In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. which we, spoiler alert, really liked a lot.
Yes.
But we both talked about kind of our personal experiences in relation to the book, which is about an abusive lesbian relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good book, and I think that we had a really interesting conversation about it. So
yeah, if we do say so ourselves, we were really interesting.
I agree. I read it.
I'm always interesting, so yeah. There's that. But yeah, check it out, and definitely read that book.
Yeah,
if you haven't, and we will be talking about another queer book in August, September.
September. I thought we decided every other month is what
we yeah, said. I think yeah. we did. September. I don't know what month it is. Are you kidding?
Oh.
Right now?
Yeah. It's June. What is it?
Yeah.
Months aren't real.
No.
Yeah.
What's up next? Well, I'm so glad you asked, Mary.
Wait, hold on. You asked yourself.
It's time for me to host again. Next
this happens
time
often.
We are going to be reading Magic for Liars by Sarah Gailey. I know very little about this book, except maybe it's a mystery and maybe there's a magic school.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited to read it.
I read this book.
I'm into it so far.
Todd read it and he didn't like it.
No, that's a spoily.
He didn't
a spoily.
And I said, well, that's okay.
I like it so far, but
I am fully prepared for you all to read this and love it and me to look like a clown. I'm
clown.
Fine with it.
Oh, man.
I'll just send in my my user feedback next time. Will just be me putting on clown makeup and turning to the camera.
Good, yes.
You know, just because you dislike something that we like, that doesn't mean you're wrong. Like,
unless it's musicals and then Emily thinks you're wrong.
No, I just don't understand.
She just hates you as a person.
I just have trouble understanding it. Just as I have trouble understanding people who don't like cats. I just don't relate. That's all.
Yeah. I get it. After Magic for Liars, on our next other-sode, we will be talking about the secret garden? Question mark.
Yeah. We will be talking about.
We will
Susan,
be talking
are you leading
about
that one?
I was like holding out a tiny bit of hope that you were just going to surprise me.
Weekend at Bernie's.
Weekend at Bernie's.
No,
I was like, maybe they decided without me as a gift.
It's a gift. It's a treat.
A gift. Wait, for what, Susan?
For what?
That's how much I think about it.
It's not your birthday.
Okay, yeah. Please do that. That would actually be a thing I would like for my birthday.
That would be a good birthday gift.
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
It's also a really Aquarius move to just make you do an episode I want on my birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were going to talk about The Secret Garden a while back, but then, you know,
things happened.
Got pushed.
Movies got pushed back.
Yeah. But it is getting released on demand. Mm-hmm. So we will be able to watch it and discuss it for our next other episode. And you, too, will be able to watch it and
listen to us discuss it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can discuss it too, just not on the show.
Yeah, you can discuss it in person, or you can discuss it by sending us an email or hitting us up on social media. You can email us about that or about Hamilton or about anything else ever, as always, and we will read it at thesquad@booksquadgoals.com. Our website is booksquadgoals.com, where you can visit our blog and check out all of our extremely intelligent ramblings. You can go and visit us on social media. We are at booksquadgoals on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We love to hear from you. We love to receive pictures of your pets. We would love it, especially if you would subscribe to us on whatever podcast app you use, but also if you have a minute to spare and a little bit of goodwill in your heart, please visit Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and review. That would be so helpful. We are still trying to get out here and get more listeners, and we appreciate all the people who are listening. We love you guys.
Yeah.
And we're so glad that you're here with us still after all this time.
We forgot to say spoiler warnings for Hamilton.
Spoiler warnings, it's history.
I mean,
it's just literal history.
You know.
Wait, hold on. Hamilton is killed by Burr? I didn't know. Burr kills Hamilton?
Well, in our defense, Burr tells you he's going to do this in the opening.
Oh, yeah, wait,
in
the that's first true. The seconds. First song ends with, like, I shot him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, no spoilers.
If you're mad at us, you're mad at Aaron Burr himself.
Mm-hmm.
He told you.
He told you he was going to do it.
We just repeated
as
it.
As played by Leslie Odom Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Boo-doo. Boo-doo.
Okay.
Boo-doo.
Bye.
Boo-doo.
Bye.
Did you hear that? Did you get the reference?
No.
That was y'all's outro music.
Oh.
Boo-doo.
Oh.
Boo-doo.
I'll try to line it up.